Okay, so first, I want you at your table, if you don't mind coming up here. I just want you to say your name and tell the people at your table how many children you have and what are their ages. Go ahead and share those details. Okay, so I have a question for each of you. Now that you've shared how many kids you have, maybe I didn't give enough time for Katie. Age range, that's good. Okay, so I want to know, I have some prizes up here that you can choose from. Who has the oldest child in our group? How old is your oldest child? 21. Anybody with somebody older than 21? All right. Our veteran mom gets to come pick first. And then who has the youngest child in our group? How old? 17 months. So 17 months is actually the youngest. You get to choose second. Okay. I wanted to introduce myself. I don't know if there are pictures there, but my name is Dana Lacaze, and I've been married for 20 years to Mark Lacaze, the good-looking guy on the side there. And then we have four kids. Our oldest is Micaiah. She's almost 15. She'll be 15 in a couple of months. With Nehemiah, he's 12. We have Selah, who's 9, and Levi, who's 8. And we have a couple of pictures. I don't know. I had some. I got really excited when I was going back through pictures to find some of like through the years. And so I sent a lot to Vicki. But we have currently, our kids are at an international school that we love, but we have done a lot of different things for schooling with our kids. When we were in the States, our kids went to public school, and so they started out there. Then when we moved overseas, they've been to three different international schools. And then also in the midst of all of that, I have homeschooled my children. One of them for a couple of years, and then the rest of them for 1 year. And so we've kind of dabbled in every kind of schooling situation, have been able to see some positives and some negatives of each of them. But no matter how many kids you have, what schooling situation that they're in, the demands of a mother are nonstop. They are never ending. And at some point, all moms feel overwhelmed and exhausted. After I had my fourth child here, Levi, I went to the doctor because I was so tired and so exhausted. I was convinced that something was wrong with me and that it was terminal. I really did. And so I went to the doctor. He checked head to toe. He did all these different things, and everything was fine. And he sat me down and he said, "Now, how many kids did you say you had?" Said, "I have four." He said, "I think you're four kid tired." And so that was a good introduction to the fact that you are just tired as a mom, right? But we can avoid burnout as a mom by setting some healthy boundaries, and boundaries are what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to look at boundaries in the way that they bring freedom, okay? So have you ever known that there's something that's good for you, but you don't really want to do it? Like, I'm thinking diet, exercise. For me, I have studied a couple of languages, and it's that study of language outside of classroom by myself. It's hard because it requires self-discipline. It requires you to be uncomfortable. It requires something of you. And it's the same thing with setting up boundaries with your kids. It's going to require something of you, and it's going to require something of your children, and it's not always going to be comfortable. So first, let's look at boundaries as keeping the good in and the bad out. So an example of this is my dog. We have a dog, and her name is Bailey. And we have a fence around our house. And this fence is very important for us having a dog. It's important to keep that gate closed as well, because There have been times that the gates open, Bailey has run out of the house and run out of our yard. Then it's taken us hours to find her. When she's come home, she's been all dirty and scratched up because she's scared of everything, and she'll run in front of a car. And so this boundary of the gate is really important. Boundaries in life and parenting can make our life better, just like the boundary in our yard can make our dog Bailey's life better. The boundaries keep the good in and the bad out. So for example, boundaries bring order to our lives. Bailey doesn't get lost when that gate is closed and she stays within. There's order. There's security. She knows she's grown in trust, and she knows that when that gate's closed, she's safe. The dogs from the outside are kept out. The men that she's afraid of are kept out of the gate, and she's safe within. It also builds trust with her. She knows she can go out and be free in the yard and be happy to run around the yard knowing that there's a boundary there. And it's also good for our relationship because she trusts that we care for her best interests. Every mom needs boundaries with their kids, but the difficulty is to figure out where those boundaries are and how to keep them. So building healthy boundaries, as you see in your notes there, building healthy boundaries requires a correct understanding of our responsibility. If you look there, we're responsible to our children, but not for our children. So we are responsible to love, to care, to listen, to teach, and to pray for our children, and to lead them and train them in the ways of the Lord. But it's important not to confuse this with that we're not responsible for our children. We're not responsible for their happiness. We're not responsible for the perceptions of others. And we're not responsible for the mistakes that our children make. Our verse today, I don't know if we have it, but it's Galatians 6:5. It says, "For each one should carry their own load." And so boundaries help us understand as a mom what load we're to carry, and as children, what load our children are to carry. And so I wanted to follow the same pattern that Vicki had last week of looking through the infant stage, the toddler stage, elementary stage, the teenage stage, and the one I have not yet reached is the kids out of the home stage. And then we're going to talk with the ladies around our tables about what is right for our families. We need to pray and ask the Lord for wisdom for our families. What's right for mine are the boundaries that I have set. I'm not the standard. We need to come before the Lord and ask the Lord what is the right boundary for our own families. And so let's start with the infant stage. It's been a while since I've had babies, but some boundaries that we can make, it's in this stage, it's important to realize where we begin and where we end, and when our child begins and where our child ends. And so some pediatricians really encourage self-soothing for the kids. That means that maybe when your child is about to fall asleep and you're holding them and you lay them down in the crib to fall asleep on their own, that is a good way for your child to learn where I end and where my child begins, and starting to learn that boundary of who is who. But also, I had a baby. My first child cried all the time. She was colicky. I would drive thinking maybe she'll fall asleep in the car. She did not fall asleep in the car. She screamed in the car. I would hold her, I would her for hours, and she would not be soothed. I had fed her, I had bathed her, I had changed her diaper, she had everything that she needed. And a good friend of mine encouraged me that to put my baby in a safe crib and let her cry was not going to hurt her. And so what I started to do, because I didn't have any family around me to help with any of this, I would put my baby in the crib, and I would go walk out, and I would get the mail that was outside. I'm not far. Nothing's going to happen. She's safe. And I got 5 minutes of peace and quiet to rejuvenate myself and to pray and ask the Lord for endurance for the rest of the screaming day. And so, you know, think through things like this to help you in a safe way, in a secure way, create some space between you and your child. For us as well, I know not everybody does this, but I could not sleep at night with babies in the room. I could hear their cooing. I can hear their turning. I can hear just that stirring that happens when they sleep. And so for us, a boundary that we set in our home and for our marriage even was to have our kids sleep outside of our room. Sometimes that's not possible, but that helped me get the rest that I needed in order to be a good mom during the day. Now, the toddler phase is an interesting phase for some. Last week, Vicki talked a lot about how important it is to play with our kids and to get down on their level and talk to them and play with them, and that's where they can learn so many good things. But it's also good to remember that in playing with your kids, there are boundaries here as well. You don't have to play with them all the time. You do not need to be their one playmate and entertain them all day long. It's okay to have blanket time. I had a good friend, and she taught her little toddlers to sit on a blanket and play with some toys, and that took some training. But that created time that the child would play by themselves. She homeschooled, so she needed her child to be entertained while she can teach the other ones. It's okay to put up a baby gate while you cook. Your child can see you. You can see your child. They're safe, but there's that separation to give you some space. And it's okay as well to have room time. Toddlers typically have naps during this season, which is a good time for a mom to have a break. But sometimes, if you're lucky like me, my youngest didn't nap during these toddler years. We were moving around the world, and that just wasn't a luxury that we had. But what helped was that he had room time. So we would put him in his room with some books or some toys and made sure everything was safe in the room, but closed the door and had an hour or a set amount of time in order to have him have his own time and for us to have some time to refresh and to recuperate and to have some quiet. And so these are just some ideas for some boundaries in those seasons. The elementary school years, you know, they're not going to rest anymore, usually at this. They can still have some room time, right? But a teacher told me one time, and the lady who kind of put these things together, she had the same thing told to her, that by third grade, we can help our kids with homework, but our third graders, they need to be responsible for their own homework. That means they need to learn some discipline and responsibility in being responsible for their own things. But obviously we can still help them at this age as they still need a lot of help. A boundary in my home during this time and as I grew up as well is we had a one activity per child per time rule. So for instance, say Nehemiah, my 12-year-old, he loves soccer. But he also loves to play guitar, and he also loves to play basketball, and he also loves to do everything. He is very social and loves to be with people as often as he can. But I have 4 kids, and even if I didn't have 4 kids, I would hope that I would still do this because it teaches some good things too. But if he chooses soccer, he can play soccer, but during this season, he cannot play guitar. But he could practice guitar, don't get me wrong, but I will not put him in lessons for guitar. I will not let him do track as well at the same time. He needs to finish a season. He needs to learn to complete what he has committed himself to. And so another boundary, an idea for these toddler years, is it's important boundary to not allow our kids to backtalk or have disrespectful behavior. It's easier to teach and train them early on, even in those toddler years and into these elementary years. It's easier to teach them during these years the correct way to interact with you than it is if you wait. How I do this is if my child is talking back to me, I will simply stop them. We will not move forward in the conversation while there's disrespectful discussion going on or a bad attitude. I will stop my child and I will call them out on it and say, this is disrespectful and it's not okay. Then I will, at this stage, I will teach and train my child what is respectful behavior and teach them what it is. Then I will have them practice it and change their attitude, change how they're talking to me, and have them practice it. And then if their attitude and behavior has changed, we can continue with the conversation. If not, it goes all the way back to the beginning, and you do it again until that behavior has been corrected. And it takes patience because they're still learning self-control, right, at this age. My last thing with the elementary years with a boundary that I have been grateful to have other people speak into my life about is screen time. Does anybody who has elementary students, is this an area that you struggle with where your kid wants more screen time, you don't know what the boundary is here, and then it becomes you start arguing with that child because of this? I just wanted to share briefly some of the ideas that we have in our house, and I'm sure others have other ideas as well. Currently, and we are ever seeing change in this, but currently for our three youngest kids, there's no screen time during the week when we have school. They're busy. They don't need screens. They come home. They need to do homework, all those things. So we don't have any screens during the week, but they can listen to music. On the weekends, we have boundaries. They have to finish their chores. They have to read for 30 minutes, and then they have to play outside actively for a set amount of time, depending on the weather. And then after all those things are completed, we allow them 2 hours for the entire weekend. Our kids think this is really mean and very cruel that we only allow 2 hours. But let me share, on Friday nights, we do have a family movie night or game night or whatever, and it's not included in those 2 hours. If we watch a movie as a family, it doesn't include those 2 hours. But it's important that when that time comes, that you're consistent and you hold them to that time. They will always want to push for more. So that's for the elementary years. For the teenage years, I have one that's only 15 and one's 12, right? So I don't have a lot of experience in these years. And so I look to other moms for this. But it is important to look ahead. It's important to look ahead and think, what boundaries am I going to set for those years, rather than looking back and saying, oh no, I need to set some boundaries. So it's good to think ahead and to consider these. A curfew is important. If a curfew means that when your child goes out in the evening, they're starting to have more freedom, you've set a time that they need to be home. And whatever that time is, the child needs to walk in that door before or at that moment. And setting that as a boundary, it's helpful for you as a mom, because if your child's out till midnight, but you're used to going to bed at 10 o'clock, the boundary is for you as a mom to get the rest that you need so you could be a good mom the next day, right? Because if you're continually staying up till midnight for your child to come home, then you're exhausted and cranky. I'm only speaking for myself in this. And so setting those boundaries and those curfews are to help keep the good in and the bad out as a mom. In this stage, it's important to be respectful as well. I will still, at this point, as teenage hormones come up, there's a lot of trouble with self-control in holding on to these respectful patterns. I will put my hand up if my daughter is being disrespectful to me. I will stop her right there. And I will say, until this changes, we will not continue this conversation. Now, she's 15, and she's struggled maybe with this for a lot longer than some of my other kids. And so she's learned how to modify her behavior, how to change her attitude, and we can move forward with the with what we're discussing. But my 12-year-old, he has not struggled with this. He's a fairly obedient child, does what we tell him to do. And so now that as all these hormones are hitting and all this self-will is hitting and this disrespectful attitude and way of speech is coming out, I have not trained him in this area very well because I didn't have to. So it is rougher to wait till the teen years to address this, but I will still do the same thing. I'll probably go back to what I did in the elementary years of trying to stop, model, have him correct, and then try again. I will do that until he learns how to have some self-control in order to change those things for himself. An expectation we have in our house and a boundary is that chores are to be done before anything else. And so if my 15-year-old does not complete her dishes and she wants to go out and hang out with friends, she's not allowed to. She will not leave the house until her chores are completed. And if something happens to where she does, she will lose her phone for 24 hours or 48 hours, depending on what the situation is, which is a big loss for her. Which that makes me think of screen time for teenagers. At this age, some restrictions are lifted. We don't necessarily have the same as she has her own phone. But you can imagine that a lot of restrictions need to be added at this season where she's learning how to manage her own screen time in this. And so we have her pay for her own data, but the phone belongs to us and the rules belong to us. We set the rules. So there are ways that you can put blocks on the phone where you can block content. You can only allow a certain amount of time per app. You can block websites. You can set times that the phone is able to be used and not used. So in the evening when I don't want her on her phone anymore at all, it turns off, basically, except for she's still able to call my husband and I. And then it doesn't come on again until a certain time in the morning. For social media, this is tricky with kids. For our family, we have decided that they need to wait till 18. We feel like social media is an adult responsibility. But I do want to say that we have made some adjustments on this. We live in Thailand. Family and friends live in America, and there are certain social media apps that are easier for them to communicate, for my daughter to communicate with some people in the States. So she has Facebook, but she doesn't have access to the stream on Facebook. She has access to the messenger aspect of Facebook. Now, our kids, all our devices, we know all the passwords for it, and we have the freedom to check all messages as well. Micaiah has begun to regulate herself a little bit better in this area, and so even when we don't have screens out when we have friends over, things like that, but even when it's just us as a family, she will leave her phone in her room so that she will actively engage with us as a family. And so I have actually been challenged by her in this to leave my phone to the side so that I'm more present with my family as well. I don't have very much longer, but I do have a couple of things that are important. Remember that boundaries determine where we begin and where we end, where our child begins and where they end. Setting boundaries is difficult. It can be painful because it's change. But if we remember boundaries in the idea of that it is they create freedom in our lives. It's worth the pain in order to do it. Lean into others for help. Boundaries are something that we need to prayerfully reevaluate. Many times we've adjusted our boundaries. And even yesterday I was talking to Vicky, and who I trust, and she challenged me in an area of boundaries in our home that we have, and I'm prayerfully reconsidering some of those things. And so leaning into the wisdom and advice of those that are around you, and then prayerfully bringing that before the Lord and allowing those changes to maybe happen in your family, that's really valuable, and that's the body of Christ to each other. But boundaries will frustrate someone. Who here has ever felt guilty with your kids? We need to learn to distinguish between false guilt and real guilt. That's the last thing here. Real guilt is actual sin. It is when we lie or we gossip, we steal, all the things that are sin. That guilt, that's real, because sin is involved. But false guilt, no sin is involved. And so we can ask ourselves, even though sin isn't involved, we may feel guilty though, but that is false guilt. So there are three questions that you can ask to evaluate what type of guilt you're feeling. You can say, what type of guilt is this? Is it real or is it false? Is what I'm telling myself true? And what can I do today to move forward? So I just have two examples. I was preparing for a meeting that was online at the same time I was prepping dinner for my children and hoping to get them outside while I was on my meeting. I was running late, so the meeting started before the kids were done, and one of my kids tipped over and spilled their orange juice all over my computer that I needed for this meeting. I lost it. I yelled and was so angry with them. And I mean, it was not good. That child ran to their room crying. I felt guilty at this point. So we need to go through those questions. What type of guilt is this? Is it real guilt or is it false guilt? The way I yelled at my child was unkind and unloving. I was valuing my computer and my meeting over them, and over handling the situation in a way that honored the Lord. So I believe this is real guilt that I was experiencing. Is what I'm telling myself true? Yes. So what do I need to do to move forward? I need to apologize to my child for yelling at them, and I need to ask their forgiveness and wait for them to give it to me. I need to give them the time that I wasn't willing to give them before. Now, my example number two. My child wanted to go to a friend's house to watch a movie with a bunch of friends. I asked about what movie that they would be watching, and my husband and I prayed about it and decided this wasn't a movie that we felt was appropriate for this child to watch. But all their friends were going to watch this movie at a house of somebody that we respect. When we told this child that they could not go, they did the equivalent of their age of running and crying in their room, like that first example. But they argued and were upset and moped and whined and complained and was very unhappy. I felt guilty. What type of guilt is this? Is it real guilt or is it false guilt? I think it's false guilt. You're right. There's no sin involved in this at all. Was what I was telling myself true? No. I was feeling guilty, but this wasn't true, real guilt, right? Just because my child wasn't happy, it didn't mean that it's real guilt. So what do I need to do in those questions? What do I need to do to move forward? I need to remember that I'm responsible to my child and not for their happiness, and I need to be confident that this was the right decision that my husband and I came to. So lies we tell ourselves can cripple us for days, weeks, or years based on guilt, and we can miss out on a lot not to protect ourselves. So now we're going to take some time and answer those questions that are in the book around the table and decide where you end and your child begins, and decide where you're going to start saying those small no's. And remember that boundaries, they bring freedom. Let me pray. Gracious Lord, I thank you so much for the wisdom, again, that only you can bring to each one of our families, Lord. We come here with different family situations, different cultural situations, but you are one God. You are true today as you were yesterday, and you are true today as you will be tomorrow, Lord, and you are the same at all times, Lord. And so I just ask that we would honor you with what boundaries that we set for our families, and that we would honor you in our consistency of holding those, holding our kids and ourselves to those things, Lord, that we can honor you in the way that we parent. In Jesus' name, amen.